I just can't believe Nikki's teaching that book to the kids. I mean, it's the whole time. Let me just break it down for you. The whole time you're rooting for this Hemingway guy to survive the war and to be with the woman that he loves, Catherine Barkley.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, Pat.
And he does. He does. He survives the war after getting blown up. He survives it. And he escapes to Switzerland with Catherine. But now Catherine's pregnant. Isn't that wonderful? She's pregnant. And they escape up into the mountains, and they're going to be happy, and they're going to be drinking wine, and they dance. They both like to dance with each other. There's scenes of them dancing, which was boring, but I liked it because they were happy. You think he ends it there? No. He writes another ending. She dies, Dad. I mean, the world's hard enough as it is, guys. Can't somebody say, hey, let's be positive? Let's have a good ending to the story?
That's a clip from the movie Silver Linings Playbook. Bradley Cooper's character isn't the only one who's had trouble with the ending to Ernest Hemingway's 1929 book A Farewell to Arms. Hemingway himself struggled with the ending to the book, which has been called the greatest novel about World War I. His grandson, Sean Hemingway, edited a new version of the book, A Farewell to Arms, the Hemingway Library Edition. The book collects all of the alternative endings. Steve Paulson talks with Sean Hemingway.
Sean, can you give us a brief summary of the storyline of A Farewell to Arms?
Certainly. A Farewell to Arms is my grandfather's classic novel about World War I. It's a love story set in northern Italy about an American who joins the Italian army as an ambulance driver and falls in love with a British nurse named Catherine Barkley. Frederick Henry, the American soldier, is wounded, and the love story progresses. Catherine gets pregnant, and Frederick has to flee Italy because he's considered a deserter, and they leave to Switzerland, where she gives birth to the child, and tragically, she and the child die during childbirth.
So a heartbreaking story in the end in particular. And some of the story is based on Ernest Hemingway's own experiences in World War I, right?
That's true, yes. He served as a volunteer ambulance driver for the Red Cross during World War I, and he also fell in love with a nurse by the name of Agnes von Karowski at that time. So some of his own experiences inspired the novel.
Now, do you remember the first time you read A Farewell to Arms?
I first read the book a long time ago during college when I actually had a semester abroad in Italy and I brought it with me. And I really enjoyed it at that time, especially reading it in Italy.
Well, and you must have been thinking, my God, my grandfather wrote this. I don't know, did that have special impact on you?
Well, it did. You know, he's always been a larger-than-life figure in our family. And even though he died before I was born, my dad was his youngest son. My mom also knew him as his secretary in the end of his life. He was a big presence in growing up as this sort of legendary figure, as a writer, even more than as a grandfather.
Yeah, yeah. Now, one of the peculiarities of A Farewell to Arms is that it turns out that Ernest Hemingway wrote lots of different endings, sort of like he kept trying to get it right. Do you know how many alternative endings there are to this book?
My grandfather famously said in an interview in 1958 with George Plimpton for an article in the Paris Review, George Plimpton asked him about how much rewriting he did, and he said, in A Farewell to Arms, I rewrote the ending 39 times. And working as the editor of this new edition of A Farewell to Arms, I found actually 47 individual endings in my grandfather's papers, which are preserved in the Hemingway collection at the John F. Kennedy Library as part of the National Archives.
I mean, those numbers, whether we're talking about 47 or 39, are astonishing. He would try to create so many different endings. Do we know why?
It is amazing, and I think it's a testament really to my grandfather as a writer and how hard he worked at his craft to achieve perfection. So it's an extreme example. I think he didn't rewrite most of his things that many times by any stretch, but it's a really good example, and we can actually see, because he preserved those manuscripts, how he went about this process.
Well, and he also wrote later on, I mean, much, much later after he actually wrote the novel, in his 1948 introduction to A Farewell to Arms, Hemingway said, "The fact that the book was a tragic one did not make me unhappy, since I believed that life was a tragedy and knew it could only have one end." So I guess he was comfortable about leaving us in a pretty dark place at the end.
Yes, that statement sounds almost ironic, given that he rewrote the ending so many times and tried different kinds of endings. It's clear from the manuscripts that he always did know that the ending was going to be a tragic one. What's interesting, I think, in looking at all these endings is to see that, yes, everyone's life ends in death, but how you live your life and how it ends is important.
Now, do you have a favorite among all these different alternative endings?
My favorite, I think, is the so-called live baby ending, because the ending of A Farewell to Arms was partially inspired by the birth of my uncle Patrick, who was born during the time that my grandfather was writing the book. And my grandmother, Pauline Pfeiffer Hemingway, had a very difficult pregnancy with my uncle, which ended in cesarean section. And of course, my uncle lived, but the drama and the difficulty of that pregnancy and how difficult it must have been for my grandfather there with her at the time played into his ideas for the ending of the book.
Could you read that ending for us, this live baby ending?
Sure. The live baby ending. I could tell about the boy. He did not seem of any importance then, except as trouble, and God knows that I was better about him. Anyway, he does not belong in this story. He starts a new one. It is not fair to start a new story at the end of an old one, but that is the way it happens. There is no end except death, and birth is the only beginning.
So he seems to be giving us a little bit of hope. Okay, the baby does live, but it's still pretty bleak.
Yeah, for him, it didn't seem the right way to end the story with a new story, basically.
Yeah. Now, there's an even darker ending, what has been called the Nada ending. Tell me about this one.
Well, that ending is really, it's almost like an existentialist take on life, basically. And I can read it. It's very short.
Yeah, if you could.
The Nada ending. That is all there is to the story. Catherine died, and you will die, and I will die. And that is all I can promise you. And it seems to me kind of a cop-out of an ending. What's amazing is that that's almost his philosophical ending. But then he goes into all these other endings, and he really, by the final ending, really achieves an extraordinarily poignant and powerful end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that Nada ending, it's sort of like he was channeling his inner Samuel Beckett there.
Yes.
There's no point to anything. There's another ending. It's been called the funeral ending. Could you read that one?
Sure. The funeral ending. After people die, you have to bury them, but you do not have to write about it. You do not have to write about an undertaker, nor all the business of burial. You do not have to write about that day, nor the next night of the day after, and the night after, and the progress from numbness into sorrow, nor all the days after, and all the nights after for a long time. In writing, you have a certain choice that you do not have in life. You can see him working through, thinking, well, this maybe is a good way to end the book. But then as he writes it, the more he writes it, the more he realizes it's not how he wants to end the book.
Which is so fascinating to actually be able to see all these different versions. I mean, it sort of is like you're being let inside the creative mind of a great writer.
It's amazing. I think it's true that most people have sadly experienced the death of loved ones, and there is all of that horrible reality of the burial and dealing with the remains and everything. But it's not what's important. It's not what you want to focus on.
Now, your grandfather, Ernest Hemingway, also asked his great friend, F. Scott Fitzgerald, to read the book. And Fitzgerald offered his own take on this. And it's worth pointing out they had a very complicated relationship, which probably played into Hemingway's response. But tell me about what Scott Fitzgerald suggested.
Well, Scott Fitzgerald was a great friend of my grandfather and an early mentor of his, and he had sought out his advice when he was writing The Sun Also Rises, his first novel. But he waited until the very end to really consult with him about A Farewell to Arms, and then when he did, Scott wrote him over 10 pages of commentary about the book and suggested a lot of cuts, and he suggested a different ending. He suggested taking one of the most famous passages, what has become one of the most famous passages of the book, about how the world breaks everyone, which Fitzgerald called the most beautiful passage ever written in the English language. And he suggested ending the book with that passage, which comes much earlier in the story, in the novel. And my grandfather actually took to heart this idea because he respected Fitzgerald's opinion. He did write out an ending using that passage, but he didn't like it and he decided against it.
Why didn't he like it?
He had it much earlier in the book. His handwritten comments on Fitzgerald's notes that are preserved in the Kennedy Library were "kiss my ass," E.H. So basically, he decided to follow his gut and his own ideas of how to finish the book.
Well, we should talk about the actual ending, the one that that we all do know, the version that was published. And I'm wondering if you could actually read it. And I'm thinking maybe if you could start with the lines, "I waited outside in the hall."
Sure. "I waited outside in the hall. I waited a long time. The nurse came to the door and came over to me. 'I'm afraid Mrs. Henry is very ill,' she said. 'I'm afraid for her.' 'Is she dead?' 'No, but she is unconscious. It seems she had one hemorrhage after another. They couldn't stop it. I went into the room and stayed with Catherine until she died. She was unconscious all the time, and it did not take her very long to die.' Outside the room, in the hall, I spoke to the doctor. 'Is there anything I can do tonight?' 'No, there is nothing to do. Can I take you to your hotel?' 'No, thank you. I'm going to stay here a while.' 'I know there is nothing to say. I cannot tell you.' 'No,' I said, 'there's nothing to say.' 'Good night,' he said. 'I cannot take you to your hotel?' 'No, thank you.' 'It was the only thing to do,' he said. 'The operation proved—' 'I don't want to talk about it,' I said. 'I would like to take you to your hotel.' 'No, thank you.' He went down the hall. I went to the door of the room. 'You can't come in now,' one of the nurses said. 'Yes, I can,' I said. 'You can't come in yet.' 'You get out,' I said. 'The other one, too.' But after I got them out and shut the door and turned off the light, it wasn't any good. It was like saying goodbye to a statue. After a while, I went out and left the hospital and walked back to the hotel in the rain." The end.
And that really is a wonderful ending, isn't it?
It is. To my mind, it is the finest of all the different endings that he worked on. And you can see even in his manuscripts, which are presented in this new edition, how hard he even worked at that last ending, changing the words to give it the most power and really cutting it down. And it's so much stronger, I think, to end the book there, you know, where he's actually in there with her. I mean, he leaves afterwards, but that moment of realization when he's in there with her as a dead body is just so sad and so real.
Sean Hemingway is the grandson of Ernest Hemingway. He's also the editor of A Farewell to Arms, the Hemingway Library edition. He spoke with Steve Paulson.